Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin, your host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington, and my headphones are very loud. Let's see if this is it here. Okay, well, thanks for turning in and for tuning in to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, your host, and True Wealth is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. True Wealth is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service, always actively involved in the purchase and sale of all forms of precious metals, scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds, coins, collections, estates, investment portfolios. We build some pretty, I don't want to say abstract, but well-balanced portfolios. It's something that we do. Take it very serious, very personal. We put stuff away for the long haul. We're here to help you lock down and secure wealth over the long haul. Frankly, folks, when you're, you know, trying to put away money, I've been doing this a long time. I've been in the money game a long time. I was in banking for years in executive level, you know, regional manager level, which is, you know, that's a ways up in banks. You've basically got, you know, two tiers between you and the president at that point, or three, depending on the bank. Series 6 and 7 license. In other words, trying to help people to buy stocks, bonds, you know, anything. I've been in real estate. I've obviously been in precious metals and rare coins and hard assets and, you know, business and even insurance. I've been insurance licensed in every state. It's quite interesting how I've been. I've been insurance licensed in every line in every state. Not every state. Blah, blah. That made a lot of sense, didn't it? No, I've been licensed in every possible line of insurance in four different states. That's what I was trying to say. And I'm not very bright sometimes. The reason the headphones were so loud was because I had the wrong ones on, and now I'm better. But anyway, I've been around the money game. Okay, the money game is, and you know, you're listening to Christian radio, and you're like, oh, that's just, you know, money, 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 no money. But the bottom line is, the money game is a very biblical thing. It's something you've got to deal with. Okay, it's people don't like to talk about it. They don't like to hear about it. They think that they're supposed to handle it this way or that. They think it's better to, you know, be frugal or frivolous, or, you know, people have everything. People abuse, almost we'll say, abuse their faith in numerous ways. Okay, so they'll say, well, you know, I'm not going to worry about money. I'm going to trust the Lord to provide, and in the meantime, I'm going to go rack up this credit card. I'm going to go shopping, and I'm going to get this, and I'm going to get that. After all, God wants me to look good, doesn't he? You know, or God wants me to have this or whatever. Or what I probably have done, I went from being the quintessential, you know, guy, the banker guy that gave everybody great advice, the soundest, always right, always conservative, right, action-oriented, to letting, you know, when the gold was booming and silver was booming, I mean, you can imagine, I do practice what I preach, so I own extensive amounts of everything that I encourage you to own. I believe in it, okay? And so when the market was just roaring and up and up and up and up and up and up and up, and up, you know, and people knew it, people come around for money. And I had some friends, a friend in particular, who had been the CEO of a Fortune 150 company. I mean, that's pretty impressive, right? Well, he and this other fellers, but they're not fellers, they're very influential individuals, were starting up a company. And it was in a line of business they knew well, and blah, blah, blah. And I put a very substantial portion of my holdings into this. Foolishly. By the way, did I say foolishly? I mean, I jumped into an arena I knew nothing about. And I knew better. I didn't. When I handed them the money, and here's what's ironic. This was back in probably 09 or 10 or something. And I believed in gold and silver. I did not believe in stocks. I knew they were trash. But I even said to him then, I said, I'm probably going to regret this and end up wishing I bought like Apple stock or something, or Google stock. You know, of course, those two went through the roof. And that doesn't mean I'd encourage you to rush right out and buy that stuff right now. I know Facebook took a hit yesterday. Facebook stock is down a little bit. Why? Because they can't be spies anymore. They're under scrutiny for stealing your information and selling it to anybody who's willing to pay their price. Facebook, folks, is... I don't know exactly where to put it or how to say it, but they're not, you know, a lot of people do their socializing there and stuff, but the ownership is bad, okay? Mark Zuckerberg, it's all about information. They harvest all of your information, and then they sell it. Well, from the pressure and scrutiny from Congress, they're supposedly cutting way back on that. Also, this, you know, phony fake news ads for elections. Folks, you tell me, and I know you agree, are you not so sick and tired of this Trump-Russia narrative rubbish? I mean, they will not let it go, will they? They just will not let it go. Well, you and I both know it's rubbish, okay? Well, anyway, so Facebook stocks, things like that are down. But in general, stocks in general are really, really up there. They just keep growing and growing and growing and growing. And I think that you just got to be wise. You got to be smart. Okay. So what do we got? We got what God said works. Gold, silver, money, etc. Right? The real thing. That's what we offer. Okay. Just what God had, what Jesus carried. And folks, understand this crystal clear. What we do today with fiat currency is not brand new, okay? Not new. Not new. Get it in your head. Why do I say that? Well, we're smarter, you think. And, well, yeah, we don't carry gold and silver now because we have a totally different system of paper money. And you grow up and you accept it and you don't even think about it. You don't even think about it. What is it? What you call money. What is it? What you call money... Those little green pieces of paper, or whatever color they are now that they've been all changed, with the magnetic strip in them, they're not money. They're not wealth. There's no intrinsic value. They are pieces of paper, printed promises from a privately held corporation called the Federal Reserve Bank. Private, folks, the Federal Reserve is neither federal and nor a reserve. It is not a federal agency. It is a private bank that is issuing money. Issuing scripts, notes of promise, decree, fiat, in complete contradiction to the constitutional command to Congress, the one and only thing that our Constitution told Congress they had to do and could not give up. For some reason, this cry, this battle cry, this drive, this pleading and begging for a central bank had just grown and grown and grown in America. People had to have, they wanted a central bank. They kept getting burned. They got sick of their local banks being crooked, you know, playing games with their money. And I'm sure it was bad when there was no regulations. You bring in, you know, a bunch of gold and, you know, I think the only time you're safe is when you've dealt in gold coins is what I've read, because you get these old timers, and they'd go out and they'd mine gold. They'd get a ton of placer gold, a ton of it. And then they take it to the bank and exchange it for paper money, and you know, and the bank would say, okay, you have X amount of gold here. And then they come back later, and all of a sudden it would change, and the price would change. And there was a company back in the day called Engels, E-N-G-E-L-S, that we used to do a lot of bullion business with because the guy was loaded. He'd won a lottery or inherited a bunch of money or something. And he had like $60 million. So he got in the gold business and he had a tremendous inventory. When everybody else was out and I needed 1,000 Kruger, 1 ounce Krugerrands, I could call him up. Boom. He'd have them. But here's the thing. So one time I call him and, you know, gold spot was whatever it was. Let's just say, you know, it's been a lot of years, but let's just say gold was $500 or $400, $450. And so I sell him, buy some gold from him, and he goes, well, gold's 455, and I'll be, 3% over that or whatever it was, or $25, $30 an ounce or whatever. So say gold was 450, and he was saying it was 455, and he was charging me 490. And then I said, okay, now that we're done with that transaction, I said, I got a bunch of gold to sell you. Oh, hang on a sec. He goes, okay, all right. Well, gold, he goes, well, gold's 444. And I'm like, wait a minute. You just told me gold's 455 when I was buying from you. And he goes, well, yeah, but you don't understand the switches, he called it, the switches. I'm like, no, I don't understand the switches because gold is what gold is. Well, he ended up, well, trust me, he had quite the reputation, and it preceded him. And over time, I mean, he's passed away since then, but, you know, word spread and everyone knew, and it's no way to live life. It's where God says in the Bible that he hates, bad scales or uneven weights or deceptive weights, I guess. Where he wants a balanced scale, a real scale. And this guy had a deceptive scale. I mean, he was essentially being deceptive about the price of gold. You don't lie to me about the price of gold. Just tell me what you want to pay and what you want to sell for, all right? If you want to make an extra percent on me because I'm selling you, you know, some gold that may not be near as desirable as something else. And I'll be honest with you folks, there's items from coins to gold to silver that we get in stock that we cannot keep in stock literally for an hour. And then there's stuff that I'll own until the day I die. Now, it's typically not gold and silver based when I talk like that. The stuff that I'm going to own until I die is usually esoteric, crazy, wild coinage that you wouldn't even want, that you're like, why do you have that? Who made that? Why'd they even make that? You know, I've got vaults full of that kind of stuff, crazy stuff. I've got so much to do. I mean, I have people that come in and they're like, hey, when you get done going through all your Civil War tokens, I'd be interested in them. Well, they don't know I have, 1,000 of them. Well, Civil War tokens, as a side note, just to explain them, I don't know why I'm doing this, was when everybody moved out. Well, not even just that. During the Civil War and the Gold Rush of 1849 and all that kind of stuff, right? What happens is when people migrate, they carry money with them, correct? Okay, so then when they get where they're going, what do? They spend the money. Well, here's a problem. So now the vendors have all your money, right? Well, the vendors are going to buy a little here and a little there, but that's it. They have your money. It's gone. Your money's gone. And so at that point, what happens? There's no more money in the hands of the consumer. The consumer has, at that time, gold that they would have loved to convert to money, but they couldn't because there was no money to convert it to. So what started to happen is certain store owners and other companies began to make coins. One of them was called a Civil War token, which is basically the size of an Indian penny. And it'll have on one size, it's got a, really cool vignettes. It might have a U.S. shield of the flag, or it might have a picture of an Indian head on one side. And then on the other side, it's what's called a store card, where it'll say, you know, Johnson and Sons Dairy or, you know, whatever it may be, whatever the company is, you know, Bob and Jones Ice or, you know, whatever they had for sale. And it's the size of a penny. And a lot of them say not 1 cent because by law you're not allowed to make money or you'll get trouble with the counterfeit laws. Then they had what's called territorial gold, okay? That's where, or I should say territorial coins, where like Pike's Peak gold. They actually made gold, you know, all these mining areas, they had to make, they had tons of gold and silver, they just didn't have currency. So they went ahead and got somebody who knew what they were doing, who was able to build a, you know, a die, who was able to carve a die, who was able to build a press in order to make the money, et cetera, et cetera. So then you get these, you know, and then there's Mormon gold, and I can go on and on. We call it territorial gold, okay? Extraordinarily rare. I have a few pieces in my own collection, just crazy rare. I have one called a Moffett piece. Now, this is just too much information. Don't let it bother you. But basically, these private corporations would put their name on it. They'd copy, essentially, the look of a U.S. coin verbatim. And where it said Liberty, they might put their company name or whatever. And they'd, you know, they would make it really cool. There was clear back $50 slugs, like in the early 1850s. I had one. That was a Kellogg, really nice, nice one. And I sold, I had a friend at the time who I sold off. When I built my building, I sold off some incredible coins out of my collection. In fact, probably the majority of the collection, and the value of it was astounding and would have blown your mind. And he, since then, has had a level of profit. That was, we built the building, I think we broke ground in like 05. I sold out early on stuff, but, and especially on gold that I had. No, I sold out early on gold on my another construction project. But anyway, the point is this friend slash customer slash friend has made just the most tremendous profit on these coins that I sold him. You couldn't even imagine it. It's absolutely just been astounding. And so, you know, that's, there's a lot of good opportunities out there, folks. And what you do, okay, you look at this stuff. In fact, let me tell you what we're going to do today. I have been promising, and it's driving me nuts. I have been promising over and over, I'm going to do a show. I want to do some shows on the fundamentals and the basics of, you know, finance and money and investing and metals. And I just get all over the board and I don't get there. And I'm going to try really hard to do that today. But what I always have notes, and trust me, I hardly ever get to the notes. You guys hardly ever hear the notes that I really have. I want to tell you something real quick. From a friend of mine who's been around the coin business a while, who sent me an article that I respect. It's from Sacramento, California. It's online. You can look it up. The guy, okay, there's some guy named Curtis, okay? So he's on a TV, a local news station in Sacramento, and he's got a little show called Call Curtis, K-U-R-T-I-S, Call Curtis. You're supposed to call him probably with these unbelievable things. So get this. Safe boxes, safe deposit boxes may not be safe after all. This is the headline of this article or this video that my friend sent me. So I proceed to watch, you know, the 86 commercials first. No, I'm kidding. But you go through the commercial and watch the video. You would not believe what's going on. This is B of A. I used to work there. Folks, here's what's going on with people's safe deposit boxes. Now, listen. Remember, we offer the highest rated privately held depository service in the Western United States. I'm going to be honest with you. We are really close, if not out of the little tiny boxes. I've got some sections of the vault that I need to get a hold of the company that installed them and see if we can change them out and get people more small boxes. But we have boxes, okay? So here's what's going on. You're not even, I mean, I'm just like dumbfounded. Well, B of A, what's happened? How about one story? A lady, an employee who worked there 40 years, goes in to get to her box, opens the door, you know, and if you know, safe deposit boxes come with inner sleeves. They're kind of a green canister. And you pull the canister out, and that's when all the bankers throw their back out because all the weight shifts inside of them and tears a muscle in their back. Trust me, we know about this. But they have canisters. And at one point, we were taking all our canisters out and just using ours as storage, and it became too much weight, and we got to get the canisters back. By the way, if you have a depository, if you have a safe deposit box with us, okay, I want to tell you something. We removed... For years, right, we would pull the canister out and just fill the box up like a shelf or like a cabinet. Over the years with 600-700 boxes, whatever we have, some of the people have like, 10,000 ounces of silver and, you know, 500 ounces of gold and whatever else. And when you have like 10,000 ounces of silver, you're talking, you know, 800 pounds. And you end up with, we actually found out we have people that have 1,000 pounds of stuff in their box. Well, it's fine. It can structurally handle it. But the problem was one of my employees who was here with me a long time would pull the canister out of all of them because he wanted them to operate as cabinets, which I get. And if we were going to do that, we probably should put a bottom on them. But anyway. So we end up with a basement full of canisters, okay? Now, your coins are in the box. They're fine. It's irrelevant. But if you haven't been in for a long time, call us. Talk to Mike or Court and see if you need to replace the canister. Because what we're doing for people or what we're wanting people to do is if you haven't been in forever, and there's people with boxes that they just keep paying and we haven't seen you for a decade, right? But we're trying to get the canisters back in the box for structural reasons. The entire apparatus, shockingly, is engineered and designed to work with the canisters. So we, of course, you know, had to take everybody's canister out, and then we start getting some bending and turning and a little bit, and where doors get hard to open, or we get the inside base of one of them starts to bend and warp because of the weight, and so we've got to get the canisters back in. So if you've got a safe deposit box and you want to make a quick call or you want to come by and check on your contents, I mean, you should anyway, right? Just come by and check on your contents and then just check if you have a canister. If you don't, remind the guys, hey, we got to get a canister in this thing. It'll help us out structurally and everything else, okay? So that's that. But the bottom line is with B of A, this is one story that came out where there's just countless people whose boxes are empty. They've been drilled without their knowledge. There's people that had stuff just randomly show up, all their safe deposit box. And I'm talking good people. I'm talking older folks that pay their bill every month, that don't buck the system. They haven't had any problem with the bank. You know, everything's perfect. They're not bouncing checks. They're not missing payments on loans. I'm talking everything's right. And by the way, none of that should matter anyway, but just to clear it up. And crazy things. People have shown up. This is happening recently. People show up to get their boxes. And I've not only did I do research on this story, okay, but this has been going on. And I've talked about it in the past. If you think that having your money, your wealth, your coins, your whatever at a depository service in a bank is safer than Coins Plus, you're wrong. Number one, they have no insurance. Okay, none. None, 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 none. Okay? That's N-O-N-E. Zero, zip, zilch, nada. None. So no matter what, someone goes in your box, takes everything out, tough, gone. This is happening all the time. All the time. Okay, all the time. I'm not exaggerating. There's a savings and loan here in town. Years back, all their clients got contacted, if they were contactable, and they were told that all the contents of their box had to be examined by the FBI, and they never said why. And that after that, that an entire, you know, hundreds and hundreds or more boxes were to be shut down. All contents had already been dumped out and poured into these great big, you know, evidence bags. People have had beautiful pieces of jewelry where they abuse it. One gal told me she went down to this place, to this, I don't want to name the bank, and I have no clue why the FBI was there, but they emptied out every box on two walls, dumped it in big plastic evidence bags, made people come and sign for it, then made the people go through their safe deposit box contents in front of the FBI agent. Folks, do you know what the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution says? It says that you have the protection against illegal search and seizure. Okay, what's their argument? Their argument is, well, you're putting your material on private property and maybe you give up your rights. B of A, I guarantee you, has probably the worst contract. I work for that company. I guarantee you, in that contract, when you sign for your safe deposit box, you give up all your rights. All of it. All of it. All of it. Folks, here's the problem. If you've got a 5-carat emerald cut, you know, VS1 or VVS1 decolored diamond in there, which you don't, but if you've got something like that, you're done. You're done. You can't prove you even had it. They don't. Excuse me. They don't accept video. They don't accept anything because they say, why would we accept video? You could leave. You could take a video, turn around, shut the video off, and take the material back out of the box. Okay, so they got an argument there. But the bottom line is, give it up. If you have a depository box and you think it's really safe, I am going. You know what? This is the first time I've ever said this. I always tell you we've got them. I can tell you this. First of all, my building is built from the ground up. With the most incredible amounts of concrete and steel of probably almost any bank, any company in the U.S., any building in Spokane, okay? Now, granted, I know as far as construction of the building goes, there's none that I know of that are better. Banks, they're, you know, some of them, the old ones with the big old safe deposit boxes or the big old vaults, they're amazing. I mean, those great big old vaults are so huge. They are amazing, okay? Ours don't rival theirs. When I built the building, because a person in close proximity to us became really jealous that we'd bought the property, and they became enraged, even though they'd had 10 years to buy it, made it extraordinarily difficult to build, and we needed to work with a little piece of land behind us to square the building out to bring, you know, our section of the building, the Coins Plus part, sticks out with the great big clock tower. It's gorgeous. You got to come see it if you haven't. The inside's beautiful. But the bottom line is we wanted to square it off, and I had a whole different floor plan. And even though at the time, the frontage feet on Division, okay, was a lot, well, let's just say a lot of money. I don't remember how much per square foot, but it was a lot. It was, oh, I wish I could remember the numbers, but trust me, it was a lot of money. Maybe $27 a square foot or something. Now you think, well, that's not much. Oh, it's not, is it? Okay, well, let's just do this for math to put it in perspective. An acre of land, I believe, has 43,600 square feet. If you go $27 a square foot, that makes 1 acre of land almost $1.2 million. Okay, so yeah, it was spendy. Well, the person who had this little tiny piece of land behind me, which, you know, was supposed to be a parking, a couple parking spots, but it was just overgrown with garbage. He just couldn't give it up because his nature is that way. the people that own the land that I ended up providentially getting it from, which, by the way, where the Bible says that God stores up the wealth of the wicked for the righteous, God walked me into the opportunity to build a building here like you can't believe. We were in Pounder's Jewelry for maybe, you know, a little under a decade, maybe 8-9 years or something. And I just knew it was time to go. We had outgrown that space so quickly, and we were just buried in there. There were definite advantages to being in there. I didn't have to maintain my own building and handle all the taxes and mechanical and, you know, all that plowing and shoveling and painting and repairs on the this and that and water issues and, you know. It was nice, but it was very small, those of you who may remember when we were back in Pounders. And it became time for me to go, and I knew it. And as I began to look, I could not find a good realtor commercial-wise. They were very arrogant, and they said, in order to even consider buying property in the city, you have to have a minimum of this amount of money. Well, I had that amount of money and then some. And they just automatically assumed I didn't. They just assumed I was poor and couldn't afford it and blew me off. Well, I ended up tripping over a guy who came in to do some business with us. And it worked out. You know, he helped. Basically, the spot where we're at, which is right across the street from right across the parking lot from Pounder's Jewelry, came up for sale. My wife and I went home that night. I mean, he was like, look, this guy, this is the first time this family has sold property since they started accumulating it in 1946. This family was extremely wealthy and they own a ton of real estate and they don't let it go. But there had been a couple inopportune deaths in the family. The timing was weird. They had to deal with a little bit of this, a little bit of that. They dumped some property. This was an old car wash. They'd already done an environmental one on it, so supposedly they cleaned up the dirt, even though once we got here, some 26-year-old EPA guy disagreed, and we spent a ton of money running all of our top 14 inches of soil through a grizzly to get everything down to a half-inch size or smaller. But our land is packed down smoother, harder than any land in the city. It's more level. It's more amazing. We built the building. There are literally parts of the building, folks, where the basement, not the where the foundation, the slab, like under our vaults, 5 feet thick, 5 feet thick of solid concrete and steel. Okay. So what that means is there was a 5 foot hole. They would put little concrete blocks that were maybe 4 by 4 inches. And then they'd lay a big crisscross of rebar over it. Then another stack of those 4 by 4 inch concrete bricks and another grate of rebar. And this went on literally for, you know, probably 20 layers. Okay. You couldn't even hardly see past about 4 or 5 of these layers. And then we filled that up with concrete. So you're not going through it. Okay. We just made that impossible. Our vaults are class 2 composite vaults. That's the equivalent of 36 inches of poured concrete thick walls. They're made out of composites that are about 2 feet, but the composite walls, they have these huge metal sleeves poured into them, and you have to crane one down onto the other to connect them. Inside of the concrete, there's every tool-destroying substance you can imagine put in there. So that you can, I mean, you just can't get through it. And then we wrap that because, you know, with me, nothing's ever enough. If you knew me, it's a problem I have. I overdo everything. I secured 1-inch thick two-run T1 tool-resistant plate steel from the teardown of an 1882 bank in Seattle. Wrapped my Class 2 vaults in that steel, which by the old days standards was Class 2. And essentially made this place. Our vaults are, you know, you never say impenetrable, but they are very, very, very difficult to get into. These are not cheap little, I mean, I see these coin dealers or gold dealers that literally will have standalone safes, okay? I mean, and they might be decent safes. And by the way, if you have a bunch of metal and you're going to Cabela's or wherever, the general store, and you're buying these gun safes, and you think that you're putting your stuff in a really safe place, let me tell you something. Number one, they will keep the honest honest. I'm not going to argue with that, you know, if it's hard to get in. But I'll tell you what, I can peel one of those safes apart in minutes. I've watched videos. I know how to do it. Gun safes are not safe safes, and they're not fire safes. They are just a secure place to keep your weapons. They're built out of low-quality tin. They don't have quite the quality they should. Back in the, quote, years back, olden days, whatever you want to call it, 20 years ago, Fort Knox built a great home safe, a phenomenal home safe. But basically, if you're going to get a home safe now, I would probably go somewhere like Allied Lock and Key or Safe and Lock or whatever they are, and get like an AMSEC. There, you get safes that are either TL or TC rated 30. What that means is they put them in a prime environment. Okay, so they go in the middle of a warehouse, in the middle of a floor, and they set the vault up, and they get two guys, and they let them have all the tools they want, everything. Acetylene torches, plasma cutters, bolt cutters, drill, diamond tip drills, you name it, they got it, okay? So now, you got to realize, now they're going to try to get in the vault as fast as they can. They have no outside pressure, okay? And so, if you're breaking into someone's house and the vault's in a closet and you're worried about someone coming and you don't want to make noise for the neighbors and you got to plug in tools and you can't get to the back of it, and it's different. So what takes 30 minutes in this testing phase would take 8 to 10 hours in a home. So that's why you get safes that are TL or TC rated 30, 45, 60. That means under the most perfect conditions with all the perfect power tools, no stress, no worry, these guys go to work full throttle and see how fast they can get into that safe. Okay, and a lot of them, TC versus TL30, it just tells you how long it takes them to get in under those perfect circumstances, okay? UL rating, irrelevant, okay? That's underwriter laboratory. That just means that your safe won't cause a fire, okay? It doesn't mean it's fire resistant. It just means it won't cause a fire. It's really junk, okay? When you get a safe, you want fire resistance, okay? There's keypads versus mechanical locks. Mechanical locks are standard on most safes. For a small investment, you can upgrade to these keypad locks. Keypad locks give you quicker access. They're easily used for older people, etc. But, you know, people get worried about batteries and plug-ins and all that. You can put in backup batteries. You know, they work. You can have a combination of both. Ours at our house, I have, well, sometimes we'll say some people have big safe rooms with guns and everything where they can hide out, where they have running water and food ready to go. And I'm not saying that I have that at my house, but I'm just saying some people do. But other people just have safes sitting around with all their stuff in it. So what I'm telling you is if you've got your stuff at your house, you should bring it here. I mean, if you know, within reason, you got to have some, right? You want to have liquidity ready to go, number one. Number two, you want to hide it, okay? Don't let everybody know you got it. Because I'm telling you, it's not that hard for someone to come into your house with a dolly, an appliance dolly, strap up just about any safe you could afford, and haul it out, just a bottom line. It happens, okay? So you don't want to set yourself up for that because it happens. Then they take it somewhere, and they have all the time in the world to go through it. There have been safes found out in the middle of fields, and there's been backhoes that have busted walls and stolen safes, and people want your safe. They just flat want your safe, okay? And so be wise. And the problem is people say, oh, I hid mine really good in the closet behind my, I was talking to somebody the other day, they said behind their luggage in some closet, and I'm like, that's not very convenient. What if you want in or out? Well, you got to move all this. It's hidden. It's silly, okay? If you're going to put a safe in your house, anchor bolt it to a concrete floor if you can. If you can't, go through the floor joists. If you have a crawl space, go underneath. Tap weld steel plates so that no one can take them apart. You obviously, if you're in a two-story building, you don't want your safe on the upper floor. You want it on the solid floor, and so on and so on. if you don't want to go through all that. Now, to get a good safe, you're talking a good $5,000. You go to Cabela's, you can buy one for $7.99. They're garbage. Now, again, if you just have a little bit of stuff, I mean, if you've spent $3,000 here or $5,000 even maybe, you know, and you've got a nice mix of stuff, you know, that's probably okay. But we have clients that have spent tremendous amounts of money. You wouldn't even believe the amounts of money they've spent. I don't even believe it. Well, into the millions. Those people either need to have a safe in their home, and I'm not talking a safe. I'm talking a safe room built from the ground up, or they need to keep their material at our building. And in most cases, they keep it here with us. And it's highly secure. When we've had power outs, I don't even lose a wink of sleep because the building, you know, bullet and bomb resistant polycarbonate, impossible to cut through. I mean, people could listen to the show and go, oh, polycarbonate. I'm going to get a special saw blade. I can go right through that. No, you can't. It's absolutely the worst jelly, gumbo, gooey garbage you've ever seen. Try cutting through inch and a third Kevlar sheets. I've watched companies like Hoppins a long time ago when they were putting in a little bit of, I think, sound. I watched a guy bust 8 diamond tip drill bits on my Kevlar and he couldn't get through it. It's crazy. You talk bulletproof, ridiculous. When I was building the building and I brought those and I got those pieces, it was, of course, winter. The building was just underway. It was hollow. And I took some of those pieces of Kevlar and polycarbonate and I tested them with my different weaponry because everything I bought was supposed to be military grade resistive. In other words, you know, whatever the military would bring, not just resistance against little Johnny's BB gun. And so I tested them and wow, was it impressive. I did make one mistake though. I pitched one of them at an angle and I wasn't thinking, just about took my head off, in ricochet. Okay. So that's that. Really important stuff. So if you're getting a safe, there's all these different ratings. TL says it's a method that's used to rate sources according to their demonstrated resistance to criminal compromise. Underwriters Laboratory uses a measuring standard called the working time NWT, which is irrelevant because UL is junk. Okay. TL-15 safes can withstand at least 15 minutes of attack with good tools in a perfect environment before being compromised. TL-30 safes can withstand the same for 30 minutes of attack with highly sophisticated tools in a perfect work environment before being compromised. And then they have when X6 appears next to a TL safe rating, it means that all 6 sides of the safe have been tested to simultaneous attack, and they're all resistive. You can go TL-30x6, et cetera, et cetera. A TL-30x6 safe, they say, is a wise investment if you're storing items valued up to $500,000, such as jewelry or other collectibles. They have TRTL and fire ratings and so on and so forth. Didn't mean to get on that topic. But if you have valuables, you know, we've got a depository service, folks, and I can go on and on about the security of it. You know, dual time locks, triple backup locks, everything's just, you know, 24/7 motion surveillance stored at 3 separate locations, okay? So we've got video of everybody who goes in there at all times. No one is ever allowed in our depository room without our accompaniment, okay? We have dual locks, so it takes 2 employees to open the vault. They each have a combo. So you can't just have one guy go rogue and take the money in. Not that they could, because we have the highest quality safe deposit boxes made. They have like 3/4 inch steel walls or doors and everything. The best of the best. When the company got done installing them, they said, we'll never install these again. They were terrible. They were so big and built so well and so hard to work with and so nice that it was just difficult for them. So I definitely did not mean to make this a show on our depository service. Golly, 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 golly. Well, let's just talk about money and finance in the world we live in. And I printed up an old transcript which is sometimes kind of fun. There was another one I was looking at about when Obama was in office. Wow, were things bad. Wow, did he screw things up. And wow, is the world messed up now because of Obama? I mean, to be completely frank with you, Obama ruined this world, ruined it. You know, that sounds real detrimental, negative. But he started a process of black liberation theology and transgenderism and special rights and all this garbage, you know, that these people keep screaming and yelling and, you know, for. We want special rights. We want special rights. They want to show up in everybody's house and scream in their face and block and destroy their family's dinner. I saw the other day where a female politician was at like a pizza parlor with her kids after a baseball game, and the kids were having pizza and the parents were probably having a little beer, who knows, and kids were probably playing some games or whatever. And then, you know, some whack nut lefty starts screaming at him, and more people show up and they're screaming at the top of their lungs, you know, accusing them of tearing families apart. And, you know, we've always got this Russian narrative, all this junk that just, it just devastates. It just destroys, folks. I mean, it destroys. It's about as good as I can give you right there. Yeah, so anyway, see if I can find a scripture here, which I probably can't. No, of course I can't. So anyway, but the bottom line is that the speech, if you want to live a long, healthy, happy life, it's maybe this is another one I'll try. First Peter 3. Let's see if I get there. No, not my day. Okay, well, anyway, but the bottom line is what comes out of your tongue dictates everything that you are. If you want a long, healthy, happy life, keep your tongue clean, all right? That is, frankly, what it's all about. And I will be honest with you. This is going to blow your mind. I'm not perfect. Yep, I admitted it. I'm not perfect. And I apologize for being not perfect. I actually have moments where I really don't control my tongue. And I'm sure most of you who've listened to me a while would say, oh, that's for sure. Your tongue is always a gushing, Kevin. Always a gushing. So you go to 1 Peter. I mean, here, let's go 1 Peter 3:8 and up. To sum up all of my harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble. No. Let's do it again. This is Peter, Paul, John. Gosh, Paul. To sum up, all of you be harmonious. Okay, think. I want you to think of each of these words. We're going to get to something even a little more important here. All of you be harmonious. What does harmonious mean? It means non-combative. Don't look for debates. Don't listen to what people say, trying to find a reason to disagree with it. Look for reasons to agree. This is what we want to do. We want to agree with others. Be harmonious. Be sympathetic. That means you care about other people and what they're going through, and you express empathy when people get hurt. You do not get self-righteous. Folks, I will tell you something right now. If you're a believer and you have not suffered, okay, you haven't had an illness and you haven't had an accident and your kids don't go off the deep end when they were growing up and everything just seems hunky-dory, you better praise and bless God and thank Him with gratitude beyond anything, because you are fortunate as can be. God disciplines those He loves. He trains us up. Now, I have heard people say, well, I don't have those problems. They must be walking in sin. Or, well, I don't know what they did to make God mad. Well, I mean, think about it. You know, you have some people that just, they struggle and they struggle and they struggle. It doesn't mean they're bad people. It means they've got a different life. God's working on them. You know, we don't know generational curses. We know none of it. But it's not for us to judge where they're at and where they're going and what's going on in their life. And it's the last thing that we should ever be caught doing is saying that somehow because your life is smoother than their life, that you somehow are a better person in their eyes, in God's eyes, than they are. You know, you look at, as an extreme, the book of Job. Job was a godly, godly man. And Satan said, well, of course he is. He said, take away everything he's got, and then we'll see how he does. He says, well, of course he's good. You take away all he's got, and he'll curse you to your face. And God said, no, he won't. Yes, he will. Why did Lucifer not know? See, that's what I don't get. Did Lucifer really believe that about Job? He probably did. Why would Lucifer think that way? How about the fact that Lucifer sees what all of us do in the dark? How about the fact that Lucifer probably knows how corrupt and dishonest and deceptive so many of us Christians are? You know, and so he doesn't buy it. I mean, he doesn't buy into it. He's like, yeah, whatever, man. You give anybody perfect conditions. One thing Lucifer knew, we don't know when Job was written. There's arguments that it was written pre-flood. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's definitely the oldest book in the Bible. We don't know much about it, at least the genesis of it. But at that point, you know, Lucifer had watched man after man fall. Every man's got a weakness. Every man has a weakness. A friend of mine said to me the other day, he goes, you know, when it comes to homosexuality, he goes, a lot of these guys that I know, they're born that way. He goes, they're super effeminate. And he goes, they are just absolutely flamboyantly gay all the way. And then later on, they do it. And I said, you know what? Everyone is born with a struggle. Everyone has a snag, okay? I don't know what it is. I mean, it's everything from lying to cheating to drinking to drugs to, worse to, you know, sneaking around and voyeurism. And I don't know, but I've read all kinds of stuff. Okay, so everybody's got a certain set of talents that God has given us. We need to understand what talents that we've got and what weaknesses we've got. So if someone's born homosexual, if you want to call it that, at least with the tendencies, and they're tempted that way, that's their burden. They've got to work it out. Now, do they, you know, when you talk about going to heaven, okay, it's pretty simple. You accept Jesus Christ and you profess him before mankind. And you serve him, you honor him, you make him your Lord and Savior. And then what you do is you keep trying to take it back and do it your way because you're impatient. You don't have time to wait for God. And by golly, you must know more than God does if you're anything like me because you keep taking it back and doing it your own way. And I'm the first to tell you, I've done some dumb stuff. I've done stuff in complete contradiction to what I know is right, to my financial training. I've said things. I mean, we all do every day, right? We say things we shouldn't about somebody else or somebody that really gets on our nerves or, you know, somebody at work that just doesn't carry their weight and you can't figure out why the boss keeps them around. And, you know, everyone's got their thing. I believe that. I mean, maybe there's a few people out there, I don't know, you know, maybe the Billy Grahams, maybe they committed their lives so far to Christ that they just live without it. You know, that is wonderful, beautiful. I would love to have been born that way, but I wasn't. From an early age, I mean, just to be candid, early on, I was a tad of a handful. And back in, I mean, heck, it had to be about 1970, Ritalin was the new drug for, and ADHD was the new diagnosis. So for a number of years, my mother had me on these extraordinary high doses of Ritalin, like five times what they overdo now. They'll give kids 2.5 to 5 milligrams, some kids 1 milligram. They were giving me 25, made me sick, you know, created drug dependency. So by the time I got to seventh grade, I was like, I want off of this stuff. My mother had made sure that everybody in the neighborhood knew I was on it. People didn't understand what back then what it was, whether I needed it or not, who knows. But my reputation got pretty tarnished where parents would be like, I don't want you around that kid. He has to take medication to control himself. Now, my kids, my son was hyperactive. We chose to let him go the non-drug route, okay? For a very short period of time, I got conned or convinced to do the drugs. And my conscience just ate me up. I thought, you know what? I'm not going to do this. I'm going to let him work it out. And I told him then, I said, you're going to have to work five times harder than any other kid to get one-fifth of the production. Now, not because my son isn't brilliant, because he's a genius, literally a walking genius. You know, you give an IQ test, he's a genius. So it's nothing to do with that. It's just that God made some of us to not sit in a school desk all day long. I call it the box. We're not made to sit in the box. We are made to be free and rejoice in the Lord. So there's a show. I don't know where in the world the time went. That's probably the fastest I've ever seen. So let's do this real quick before we close. 1 Peter 3:10, the one who desires life to love and see good days. Do you desire that? Must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Don't trash talk your neighbor. Don't trash talk anybody. If you have someone you're used to trash talking with, change the subject, get away, put an end to it. If you can't, get away from the person. Speak edification, Ephesians 4:29, let everything be edifying. Folks, thanks for tuning in. I'm sorry. I have got to get some of these fundamental shows out, and I really want to do it, and I really want you to get a hold of us. Bring us your savings and 401ks and IRAs right now. Folks, the prices, the market, it's so perfect. This is the time. Even Warren Buffett said it. Have a great weekend. Take care. God bless. Thanks. Bye-bye.